ദീകനക സൂത്ര This discourse again middle length sayings, that is the 74th discourse. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying near Rajagaha on Vulture's Peak mountain in the Bose cave. Then Diganaka, the wanderer, went to the Blessed One and on arrival exchanged courteous greetings with him. After an exchange of friendly greetings and courtesies, he stood to one side. As he was standing there, he said to the Blessed One, Master Gautama, I am of the view, of the opinion that all is not pleasing to me. So nothing pleases him. But even this view of yours, Arjivasana, all is not pleasing to me, is even that not pleasing to you? So you see that when he says that all is not pleasing to me, so certainly that view is pleasing to him. So Buddha got it from that, and this Agivasana is sort of a clan in that, you know, that's the addressing to the same person. Even if this view of mine were pleasing to me, Master Gautama, it would still be the same. It would still be the same. So he's saying it is included in the same thing, that not pleasing. Well, Agivasana, there are more than many in the world who say it would still be the same. It would still be.
So, he's saying that that view is placing, but the others are not placing. Is that what he's saying?
Well, he's saying even if it is placing, it is sort of included in the same thing, so it is not placing way. Yeah.
Okay. So, even that view is not placing, not placing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So Buddha said that there are more than many in the world who say it will still be the same, it will still be the same. Yet they both do not abandon that view and they cling to another view. There are fewer than few in the world who say it would still be the same, it would still be the same. And they both abandon that view and do not cling to another view. So they give up. There are some Brahmins and contemplatives who are of the view of the opinion that all is pleasing to me. There are some Brahmins and contemplatives who are of the view of the opinion all is not pleasing to me. There are some Brahmins and contemplatives who are of the view of the opinion that a part is pleasing to me, a part is not pleasing to me. So Buddha addressed all the three possible scenarios, all included, all removed, and part. With regard to those Brahmins and contemplatives who are of the view of the opinion that all is pleasing to me, that view of theirs is close to being impassioned, close to bondage, close to delighting, close to holding, close to clinging. So these Pali words over here, saragaya, sangyojanaya, abhinandanaya, ajosanaya, and upadanaya. So that means that the that grasping and holding, that sort of characteristics are there in their opinions. With regard to those Brahmins and contemplatives who are of the view of the opinion that all is not pleasing to me, that view of theirs is close to not being impassioned, close to non-bondage, close to not delighting, close to not holding, close to not clinging. So it sort of looks like it is better. Rather than the other one is sort of binding, this one is put with getting rid of. So then this, when this was said, this Diganaka, the wanderer, said to the Blessed One, Master Gautama, commends my viewpoint. Master Gautama recommends my viewpoint. So he thought that yes, this is good, that getting into that way. With regard to those Brahmins and contemplatives who are of the view of the opinion that a part is pleasing to me, a part is not pleasing to me, whatever is pleasing to them, their view is close to being impassioned, close to bondage, close to delighting, close to holding, close to clinging. Whatever is not pleasing to them, their view is close to not being impassioned, close to non-bondage, close to non-delighting, close to not holding, close to not clinging. So in that mixed case, there are that whatever thing that is pleasing, then there is bondage. Whatever thing that they are actually saying, this is not pleasing, So there is this non-bondage. With regard to those Brahmins and contemplatives who are of the view of the opinion, all is pleasing to me, a wise person among them considers that if I were to grasp and insist firmly on this view of mine, that all is pleasing to me, and to state that only this is true, all else is worthless, I would clash with two. So his view is that all is pleasing. And whoever got the view that all is not pleasing to me, and whoever got the view that a part is pleasing to me and part is not pleasing to me, so those are against, because that I am saying that all is pleasing to me, or all is pleasing to me, and the others are saying all is not pleasing to me. Therefore, they have this clash. And if someone says a part is pleasing, then there is a clash as well. Where there is a clash, this is the nice thing. Where there is a clash, there is dispute. Where there is dispute, quarreling. With there is quarreling, annoyance. Where there is annoyance, frustration. Envying for himself, clash, dispute, quarreling, annoyance, frustration. He both abandons that view and does not cling to another view. Thus there is abandoning of these views. That there is relinquishing of these views. That's really nice part over there. Because isn't this happening in the society? Somebody got some sort of a view, you know, that Iraq, you know, that president taking him down or whatever thing it is, you know, someone is of that view, and so people are arguing and fighting. Remember that Iraq invasion time, people are fighting with the same thing. There's one view and then others are against it. So Buddha said that when we have those quarreling, what's happening is that, you know, it's lead to frustration. You know, they fight, verbal, tongue fight, that's all. And so one would avoid both of these things. With regard to those Brahmins and contemplatives who are of the view of the opinion that all is not pleasing to me, a wise person among them considers that if I were to grasp and insist firmly on this view of mine, that all is not pleasing to me, and to state that only this is true, all else is worthless, I would clash with two, the Brahman and contemplatives, who is of the view of the opinion that all is pleasing to me, and the Brahman and contemplatives, who is of the view of the opinion that a part is pleasing to me, a part is not pleasing to me. So if I am holding the view that all is not pleasing to me, whoever say that all is pleasing, they are clashing with me. So same thing lead to the quarrel and dispute, and then, you know, frustration. So having seen this particular one would give up this view as well. It's actually arguing and all those things is only spend our useful time. We just waste the useful time. One who can contemplate about the impermanent nature or suffering nature is spent on useless argument, and that will not do any good to anybody. And then the third place, with regard to those Brahmins and contemplatives who are of the view of the opinion that a part is pleasing to me, a part is not pleasing to me, a wise person among them considers that if I were to grasp and insist firmly on this view of mine, that a part is pleasing to me, a part is not pleasing to me, and to state that only this is true, all else is worthless, I would clash with two, the Brahman or contemplatives who is of the view of the opinion that all is pleasing to me, and the Brahman and contemplative who is of the opinion that all is not pleasing to me. So the other two extreme cases, all is pleasing and all is not pleasing, will clash with the person who is partly pleasing and partly not pleasing. I would clash with these two. Where there is a clash, there is a dispute. Where there is a dispute, quarreling. When there is a quarreling, annoyance. Where there is annoyance, frustration. Envying for himself, clash, dispute, quarreling, annoyance, frustration. He both abandons that view and does not cling to another view. Thus there is the abandoning of these views. Thus there is the relinquishing of these views. So that Agyavasana thought that, you know, his view is the one that Buddha admired. Buddha actually said that this one is better, but It is troublesome and should not go into that one either.
So here essentially it was saying that don't take a view, that is the answer.
Yes.
Yeah, because taking a view, you clash with other two.
That's right, always.
Always. And the, as a result, you get quarreling and all sorts of things. And to avoid that one, don't take any view and avoid. And then in that way, you are safe.
Mm. So only view one can take is the right view. Because it's the right. Right view is the only the Four Noble Truth. So in the Four Noble Truth, only the Nibbana is the truth. So all the others constructed, and if I say it is suffering and someone says it is not suffering, so there is a clash.
For a lay person, for example, we got plenty of issues and there are plenty of argument as well. In that sense, we sometimes, in my opinion, is something different to what other opinion. And so it comes in the way, but sometimes we need to look at what is the correct view. Mm-hmm. And in this argument, we can say anything correct, huh?
Yeah,
other than noble.
Look at the quotes over here. The Buddha says, if we were to grasp instant firmly on this view of mind, that part is pleasing to me. Only this is true.
Hmm.
All else is worthless.
All right,
that's the bad part.
Extreme point.
If you say, it is my opinion,
yeah.
Or my humble opinion that this is the case, and if you are not telling that all else is false, that is fine. If you are,
so that means you have to sort of admit what other people say.
That's right. If you, at the problem is, if someone is actually putting that particular view, at that time he clings to it very heavily. So then he, when he clings, because view is formed as it is true, as it is permanent. That's the bad part. So when that one comes in, he argues for that. He rejects all the other views. The bad one is, out of all these things, is this identity, I am. And that comes as the true, permanent thing. So that's the one killing mostly. And in the society, all the other the views, you know, if you say it is your opinion, that is fine. But if, as far as you are not rejecting others' views.
It's the case for many people in Sri Lanka for politics.
That's right. Everywhere.
Even in just a friendly discussion, I hold my view as the correct view all the time. Because I hold that one, because I know that it's correct. But until I realize that it's not correct.
That's correct. That's right.
Until that time I hold, this is wrong, this is right.
And again, if you say something, I think, or I don't think, that it is a view anyway.
That's right. Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's a really good point. You know what it does? It cuts down the noise tremendously. This is leading to this vachisankhara, the volish, verbal formations. Frivolous talks.
Yeah.
You give up frivolous talks by hearing this one, properly, thinking.
True.
Because if whatever view I actually express, well, you can say, if you want to say, well, this is my opinion about that one. And somebody else might say, well, this is my opinion and it is okay. Buddha said, it's okay to have your opinion as far as you are not rejecting other ones. So then you would wonder, wise person would wonder, well, this is an opinion of mine. And that opinion may be true, may not be true. So it becomes a frivolous talk. Why would I talk about that? So you give up.
Isn't expressing a view a part of construing?
Well, it is coming from former habitual tendency. Why you are constructing? Why would I want to tell something in the society?
Yeah.
It is coming because of that I have the identity view. I want to put myself up over here.
So
I want to make a noise. I want to, you know, make my personality come into sort of thing.
So that's a bit of I making and my making.
That's right. It is. Simply for that one. The Buddha will speak only when it is the truth. and it is conducive to Nibbana, even if it is the truth, he does not speak if it is not conducive to Nibbana, and he knows the right time to speak as well. So Buddha watches that one and see, well, this is the truth and this is conducive to Nibbana. There, and then he waits until the right time and then he speaks. He does not speak just because it is the truth.
And he didn't actually, Buddha has expressed his views about the existence of life or end of world or things like that, how world began and all that.
Well, the end of life sort of thing, no, Buddha is not saying that there are certain things that you one should not be talking about, asking about. And then the world began, in first point cannot be seen. Buddha said that it cannot be seen. And the Buddha gave a description how it evolves, you know, the time to time contractions and expansions sort of thing. But the first point cannot be seen by anyone. So the ignorance has been there. So that's the thing. Ignorance, remember that ignorance discourse that we discussed.
But I think she is talking about the five questions Buddha didn't want to answer. That at that time they have a group of monks who want to be answered.
Yes.
Five questions, but Buddha didn't answer that.
That's right.
There's no point to talk about that because that leads to nothing.
Yeah. It does not conduce to Nibbana, mainly. Any of those things does not conduce to Nibbana. And whether you know about it or not know about it, suffering is here. So, that's the thing.
So, just in this one where he talks about the view that all things are not pleasant, how does that go with the view that all things are dukkha? Is that the same thing, the suffering, or... it felt like a word game to me. Like,
All phenomena
are not pleasant. All phenomena are dukkha.
Well, all phenomena is when you say all phenomena, Nibbana is also phenomena. Nibbana is not suffering. That's the only thing that is not suffering. It's a cessation of suffering. So what Buddha said is whatever thing constructed is subject to suffering. Whatever thing that is constructed is subject to suffering. It's not all phenomena is suffering. If you say all phenomena is suffering, then the Nibbana is suffering as well. So there are exclusions. So even that statement becomes wrong in that sense. So all is pleasing, all included Nibbana. So all is not pleasing. So you can see immediately we lead to that extreme point. So whatever thing constructed is subject to suffering. If there is no construction, there is no suffering. It was constructed by the... there is a really good discourse. And it's Chanki Sutta, as I can remember, in middle and say. It is very lengthy, so I don't feel like taking it over here. It's the first part is very lengthy. And I would recommend you to read it.
Do you remember the number of them?
Middle-length saying, I can't remember the number though.
What's it called?
Chanki Sutra, as I can remember. Chanki Sutra. I can tell you at the end, I'm looking at my mobile. Yeah. And it goes with these things. And it was a 16-year-old person who was actually questioning Buddha. It's a very clever person. 16-year-old boy. And so Buddha explained and how one is going to this the truth, attainment of truth, what is conducive to the attainment of truth. It's really good discourse because of the lengthiness, and the first part is a bit noisy. So therefore we would lose quite a lot of energy to read it. So I would recommend you to read it. You will understand it. Very carefully one has to read that one. So, now Buddha is telling, now Agivasana, this body endowed with the form, composed of the four primary elements, born from mother and father, nourished with rice and porridge, subject to constancy, that is impermanent, rubbing, pressing, dissolution and dispersion, should be envisioned as inconstant, that is impermanent, suffering, stressful, a disease, the cancer, an arrow, painful and affliction, alien and disintegration, and emptiness and not self. This is this the Sila Sutta part Buddha is saying. It is this anicchato, dukkato, rogato, gandato, sallato, agato, abadato, parato, palo, kato, swimato, anattato. Likewise, one has to contemplate. That one is itself a really good discourse, appear in Kanda Samyutta, Connected Discourses of the Buddha, and Kajjaniya Vagya, as I can remember. It's a really good discourse. It's a question between Venerable Sariputta and another monk asking how one can do wise attention, Yoniso Manisikara. And then the Venerable Sariputta said that one has to look at this five aggregate subject, this matter, feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness as impermanent, subject to suffering, as a dart, as a disease, and arrow is the dart, and painful, and affliction, alien, disintegration, and emptiness, and not self. That quite a lot in that one. We can't sort of go into much detail in it. It's very important if someone practice and know about it thoroughly. But what Venerable Sariputta said, that if someone practicing that way, that he becomes stream mentor, he will become a stream mentor. And then the other monk asks, after attaining the stream mentor state, what one should be doing? Then he should be attending to the same thing, same way, regarding the five aggregates, that this is impermanent, subject to suffering, as alien, as a disease, as a dart, keep on thinking about that. And you can say that if someone see it that way, one would give up this the attachment to these forms. If you see it, for example, think about the form, think about your leg, think about that this is impermanent and subject to suffering, and it's a like a boil in your body, right? When you have a boil in your leg, what do? You treat it, right? And you can't get rid of it, just cut it and put it away or something like that. So the body is like that, you know, for that wound you would apply oil, cover it, and you know, protect it. Why do you like your wound? You don't like your wound, but you're depending on this body, so therefore you treat it very well. And this body is as such. This body, one has to maintain in that way. One has to feed it, put it to sleep, turn this way, turn that way, and get up in the morning, wash it, and feed it again, you know, going to the toilet, and, you know, going to office, doing the work, coming back, same thing again and again because of this body. Body is that bad. And if someone think that way, so the Venerable Sariputta said that by doing that one, the person would attain the once return state, the second state of sainthood. And then that bhikkhu asked that what should that person do? Now he should be doing the same thing. So then he would contemplate about this is as the impermanent suffering, and as a dart, as a boil, as a disease, as alien. This alien means that dependent on others. Now we are all dependent on others. So a monk would depend on the food given by people. We are completely dependent on the organization that we are working, and the people around us, and the farmer who actually do the farm, and the Woolworth and other shops that they transport, those transportation, and then those people who are selling it. And we are completely dependent. Imagine for a second that Woolworth is, no, any shops, they are not selling you anything. What would you do? And the farmer is not cultivating anything. What do you eat? One may be a person with $1 billion. He can't eat those things. Those are just papers.
Think about if we don't have for a week, for example, petroleum or electricity, what would happen to us?
You can't move this body anywhere. So that much dependency. So someone thoroughly analyze this one and see, then he would see that your pride is gone. First you think, oh well, I am such and such, I'm great, I got money, I got car, I'm blah blah blah. And then if you think this one wisely, analyze this one and then see, I'm nothing. If the farmer doesn't grow it, I can't eat. If the other people do not transport it, you know, you can see these things when the earthquakes and sort of thing happen, how people are struggling. You need to thought. This is very important. In the meditation time, thoroughly analyze and see. And this conceit mana is gone in your mind. When you become humble, then you can see Dhamma properly. But if the mind is covering by this conceit that I am, you know, I'm a big, I'm strong, I'm capable, then
you don't need that much, because if you go to a crowd that nobody knows about you,
Then you can see
it's same thing, isn't it?
It is, but this one you can come in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody maybe I don't care, other people are thinking, oh, but I still got money, I still got these things, I got my body shape, you know, color, all those things. So can be proud. So so each term, there are about 11 terms over there. One has to thoroughly see each one of them and analyze it. So this one is, so that discourse is goes on like that one, a Sila Sutta, and then finally that one can attain the Arahantship by doing that one. And then that monk asks that what that Arahant should do. So the Arahant should no need to do anything. But by doing this one, he would abide in ease. So it is that powerful. It is that powerful, and I would like to link with this one is to there is a discourse called Ratha Vinita Sutta. There is this seven chariots that you get into one and you go somewhere and get into the next one, and then you go to, it's like a, you know, seven cars or something. And its first one is this, the virtue. One would have the virtue developed. And then the second linking, seven cars. The first car is the virtue. It carries you to a certain level. And then the second car is the purification of this, first one is purification of virtue. The second one is the purification of this thoughts, where chitta visuddhi. So that means you are attaining the jhana concentration, sort of thing. And then there is this ditti visuddhi. Ditti is that the views becoming correct. So this is the view we were talking about here a little while ago. This view, that view. That view in that discourse is about, you know, that we have this five aggregates: matter, feeling, perception, original formation, and consciousness. It is complex thing. When there is this complex thing, then the identity view comes to arise. And then the Buddha comes and tells you that this is not so. It is dependently arising. You know? So this is this thing that I am calling I am is sort of constructed, dependently arising. So still you did not attain to the level of understanding it, but you got rid of something. Okay, so if you have faith about the Buddha, then you think, yeah, so there is this different opinion, different thing I can see, that this matter is made from this mother's milk and all those things, and grown. So you can see the sort of dependent origination over there to a little extent. So therefore, you have a better view about the self. And that person further, so that's the third car, and then get down from that car and get into the next car. And that is the fourth one is called Kankha Vitarana Visuddhi, where one would sort of see that this Nama Rupa, that is mind and matter, level. And still he is not a stream enterer, but he has got the faith about the Buddha. He is sometimes called Chulasotapa, that person who can actually attain, who is close to become a stream enterer. And then the fifth one is called Maggang Magga Jnana Dasana Visuddhi, where this is, whether this is the path, this is not the path, deciding on that. It is coming from this part over here. This little bit we just discussed about this anicchato dukkato, that is impermanent, subject to suffering, that way. How it is? It is come this way, that there are three things. It's called parinya, that is knowing. One is called jnata, tirana, pahana. Jnata is that the knowing of that one, that you know about these things. So what you know is that you know about the sensual desires, and then you learn the renunciation, and then you know about the anger, and then you know about the loving kindness, you know, giving up the anger. And one would know about the harming, and then as opposed to that one, non-harming. So they are aware of these things. There may be people who are not even aware of these things. You see that we are fortunate to talk about this. There are people who does not know. They all think about the killing, killing, killing. Some people, maybe other way round as well, any extreme point. So that is knowing part. And the second one is called Thirana, a decision. Thirana Parinya. So it is, how does it come? So you see that we got this matter. Now this material thing, we normally think that this is permanent. You know, that's what we normally think. But when you contemplate and you see that it is, you know, people are passing away, dying, and so therefore it is just, the impermanency is here. There is this aging, sickness, death sort of thing. Oh, you analyze in this way that it is impermanent, subject to suffering, a disease, an arrow, a painful, an affliction, an alien, disintegration, empty, empty and not self. You see in that way. So when you contemplate about this one thoroughly, what do you get? You get into a decision. Yes, it is. It is suffering. As opposed to previously thinking that it is not suffering, now one would think, yes, it is suffering. As opposed to things that they are pleasant things that one would actually grasp and hold it before, now he has taken a decision that these are bad things. Bad things are coming against me, you know, in my eye, ear, nose, all those attacking me. So he takes a decision. It's called Thirana Parinya. He decide. One would decide. When one would decide, it leads to something called Pahana Parinya. That is the abandonment of the same thing. So, let's say a person who is smoking cigarettes before, and he got some sort of problem, he went to a doctor, and doctor described, telling him that, good man, if you keep on smoking, that your lung, you know, has to be operated or you die, sort of thing. Now, next day, having heard this one, and he want to do smoke, and but he see these things, you know, someone is smoking. So, that tendency would have come to him that this one. But if he has taken a decision in that doctor's presence that day that, I'm not going to do it anymore, so that one is coming up over here, that the smoking is bad, not smoking is good. So therefore, he would actually give it up, pahana, give it up, abandonment of the thing. So these three things are in that this the fifth one. This is the path and the not path. So you can see this part of Buddha mentioning, it is in the fifth link, fifth car, you can see, coming from the previous one. And so that part is very important about that, about the body. And then there are these three kind of feelings, with the same, a pleasant feeling, a painful feeling, and neither pleasant nor painful feeling. On the occasion when one feels a pleasant feeling, one does not feel either a painful feeling or neither pleasant, no pleasant, painful feeling. One feels only a pleasant feeling on that occasion. On the occasion when one feels a painful feeling, one does not feel either pleasant feeling or neither pleasant nor painful feeling. One feels only one feeling on that occasion. On the occasion one feels neither pleasant nor painful feeling, one does not feel either pleasant feeling or painful feeling. One feels only neither pleasant nor painful feeling on that occasion. So we get only one kind of feeling, not all common. We get either pleasure or we get displeasure, or neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable feeling. When you have the pleasurable feeling, you can see it is when the displeasure feeling ceases. The pleasure is where the displeasure ceases. And the displeasure is where the pleasure ceases. When one stops, the other one comes in. So, a pleasant feeling is impermanent, fabricated, dependent, co-arising. It is anicca, sankata, paticca, samuppanna. Anicca is impermanent, is translated as inconstant here. And the fabricated, sankata, you know that those constructed things, constructed by volitional formation, or less think it is constructed by the volitional formation, habitual tendency. I used to do this, so therefore. I have done it before, so therefore. You know, that's how it is constructed. And dependently arising. Dependently arising means that you need to apply into the three time points in that case. In the past, also, this is how it is arising. A human being come to arise by this craving, you know. At present, it's the same. They come to arise because of this craving. In the future, also they come in the same way. So, the past, future, present, you need to apply in the three time points. So, you co-arising. Subject to ending, that is kaya dhamma. Subject to vanishing, vaya dhamma. Fading, virada dhamma. Ceasing, nirodha dhamma. So, they all subject to this thing. So, if a feeling is, imagine, even if you take this, if a feeling is not subject to ending, well, you can't find the Nibbana or anything. This is permanent in that case. But it is, you can end it, therefore you can attain Nibbana. It's a valid point, very valid point. One would naturally think about it. We continue as it is that we can't get rid of suffering. It cannot be, can be stopped. That's what Buddha is saying. It's Nirodha, it is possible to cease it, get rid of it. Even living one can get rid of it as well. Attaining of the cessation of feeling and perception. At that time there is no suffering. A painful feeling is also inconstant, fabricated, dependently co-arising, subject to ending, subject to vanishing, fading, ceasing. A neither pleasant nor painful feeling is also inconstant, fabricated, dependently co-arising, subject to ending, subject to vanishing, fading and ceasing. So this Pali words are really good. Anicca, sankata, paticca samuppanna, kaya dhamma, vaya dhamma, virada dhamma, nirodha dhamma. It's cessation. Nirodha is cessation. So all three feelings go in the same way. All are impermanent, subject to suffering and subject to ending, vanishing. Seeing this, an instructed disciple of the noble ones grow disenchanted with pleasant feeling, disenchanted with painful feeling, disenchanted with neither pleasant nor painful feeling, disenchanted. He grows dispassionate. From dispassion, he is released. With release, there is knowledge released. He discerns, birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, the task done, there is nothing further for this world. A monk whose mind is thus released does not take sides with anyone, does not dispute with anyone. He words things by means of what is said in the word, but without grasping it. You see, whatever thing that these people has got some sort of a verbal thing. For example, we are saying that I am. So one would actually think, what Buddha said, there is no I. Right? But even Arahant go by the persons. Vohara, you know, how they actually use it, the term. He has no dispute about it. So he's using it. Remember, this one came up last time as well, as an entity or whatever thing you were talking about. It is just the way of expressing it. If you go in something, although you know it, if you go completely away, if you do not use that word, that others won't understand at all. So it's okay to use the word I am doing that one. But you need to do it with understanding. That I am is what someone constructed. So it's a, it is happening to contemplatives after going through that this Dhamma. They go into one side. They go into one side in the sense, so this leg is not mine, eye is not mine, ear is not mine, all those things not mine. The Buddha said that it is not mine. So therefore, I am not here. And then there someone else will say, well, if you are not here, then you don't have a father, you don't have a mother, you don't have a teacher, sort of thing. So then there is a problem for that one. So you can see that the same two views, someone says exist, someone says does not exist, aren't going with that way. They are, they see the dependent origination, this is constructed this way. So with this condition, this one arises. With the ignorance as condition, these volitional formations come to be. As a volitional formations as condition, the consciousness come to be. As a consciousness as conditions, this mind and matter come to be. And the mind and matter as conditions, these six spheres, in sense spheres come to be. At the six spheres as condition, the contact come to be. As contact as a condition, the feeling come to be. As feeling as condition, there is this craving. As craving as condition, there is clinging. As clinging as condition, there is existence of the very same craving, bhava. And existence as condition, there is this birth. So with the birth, there is this the materiality, matter come to arise, the feeling come to arise, perception come to arise, all these things come to arise. So this dependent origination, don't try to break it. You know, okay, so this is, these are the points. I can cut it over here. So let me cut it into the feeling point or perception point. You can't do that. What you can do is just understand that this is so. It is happening in this way. So not just don't use a scissor and cut it this point, then therefore there's nothing. It won't happen. So it's simply understanding that this is how it is occurring. It is very deep, very, very deep. One has to go through thoroughly.
When I read that bit, as you said, to me, it, I could not start at one point and put a whole heaps of arrows and go in a straight line. It has to come as a circle, isn't it?
It is a circle. It is a circle, and it is not only one circle. Within that 12 links, there are small circles as well. Jump from one to another, but it's circle again as well. So many arrows inside it, and so many ways. So Buddha is sort of in one discourse, Buddha says, when he was a bodhisattva, before his enlightenment, he was actually thinking about this dependent origination, that how, and when he contemplated, it went up to the sanskara, volitional formation. And from volitional formation, he sees that consciousness come to be. From the consciousness, volitional formation. So it goes that way. So there is a one loop over there itself. Volitional formation constructs the consciousness. And consciousness constructs volitional formation. So there is a repeat loop over there. And then there are other loops. Consciousness to nama-rupa, that is the mind and matter. And over there you can even go back to the ignorance as well. So many, many links. That's why people can't understand. If you just take one link over here, one may be able to think to a certain level. It's not easy one doing that, but there are so many circles inside it. Very complicated. Venerable Ananda, he was a Sri mentor, he said to the Buddha that this dependent origination, oh, it is good, I understand it. So Buddha said, do not say that, Ananda, do not say that, Ananda. Because Buddha knows the how difficult it is. There are knowledges. Remember, we discussed one discourse about 36 knowledges. Each link is a knowledge. So there are 36 knowledges according to that. Another discourse Buddha talking about 76 knowledges using that. So it's really big. So now at that time, Venerable Sariputta was sitting behind the Blessed One, fanning him. The thought occurred to him, indeed, it seems that the Blessed One speaks to us of the abandoning of each of these mental qualities through direct knowledge. Indeed, it seems that the one well gone speaks to us of the relinquishing of each of these mental qualities through direct knowledge. As Venerable Sariputta was reflecting thus, his mind was released from the fermentations through not clinging. He became an arahant. While this Diganaka, the wanderer, there arose the dustless, stainless Dhamma eye. Whatever is subject to the origination is all subject to cessation. He became a stream mentor, the Venerable Sariputta. He was fan in the Buddha and he became the Arahant, the chief disciple. And then the Diganaka, the wanderer, having seen the Dhamma, having attained the Dhamma, having known the Dhamma, having fathomed the Dhamma, that is penetrating, having crossed over and beyond uncertainty, having no more perplexity, having gained fearlessness, having become independent of others with regard to the teacher's message, said to the Blessed One, "Magnificent Master Gautama, magnificent, just as if he were to place upright what was overturned, to reveal what was hidden, to show the way to one who was lost, or to carry a lamp into the dark, so that those with eyes could see forms. In the same way, has Master Gautama, though many lines of reasoning, made the Dhamma clear. I go to Master Gautama's for refuge, to the Dhamma, and to the community of monks. May Master Gautama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge from this day forward for life." So you can see the same Dhamma hearing, and two people contemplated. One became an Arahant, another person became a stream mentor. It is because that Venerable Sariputta has developed these things to greater knowledge before his wisdom is so great. So, yeah, it's sort of a really good discourse. It looks short, but quite a lot inside it. And it has this this impact. It is this, the first part about the views is that to cut down the unnecessary verbal things, you know, that Diganaka, when he was coming, he was clinging to that view and holding that view and going on with that view and a waste of his time. And so Buddha made it clear what should be made clear. And,
anyway, as far as the constructions happen, so you cannot stop waves, isn't it? Because of the construction, you get a view.
Yes, but that views, if you are contemplating about the impermanent nature, if you have the wise attention, those views become the right views or part of right view. So, if you think about the Mahachattarisika Sutta, what Buddha says, Buddha took the simple example where how you get the wrong view. And then you said, the Buddha said the wrong view is that there is no mother, there is no father, there is no nothing given, you know, all those things people have that sort of view as well. There is no other world, there is no this world. So that is the wrong view. And there is this right view. What is right view? Right view, Buddha said, is twofold. One is this mundane right view. Mundane right view is that there is father, there is mother, there is a result of giving, sort of thing. And Buddha said at that time, that becomes his right view. As far as you are saying, you are accepting that there is father, there is mother, as far as you are with that view, although it is mundane, that is the right view. Okay, it is not wrong. That's the main thing. So wrong view lead to the hell, animal realm, and that one. Right view will never lead to the bad one. And then Buddha said that there is the supramundane right view, where in the Aryan thought, Aryakittasa, Aryan thought, the noble one's thought, Anasavakittasa, one who got rid of these cankers, and Aryamaggan Samangino, who is who got this noble status, Aryamaggan Bhavito, whoever use this noble eightfold path, for example, whatever the wisdom he got, paknya bala, the power of wisdom and the faculty of wisdom, and then the investigation of truth, and then the right view. So that is the Aryan one. That occurs in the Aryan mind, or when you are actually meditating in the eightfold path, that becomes the right view at that time. So you can see, although it is constructed, if it is constructing the right view, then that's good. Because then it polishes it goes through another circle. Like that smoking example, the person who was smoking and he went to the doctor and coming back, and he sees something, he sees that smoking is bad, not smoking is good. So at that time it becomes his right to you. So he constructed it, right? Because of his knowledge about the doctor, thinking that doctor is right. Oh, he got this right view. And then he put effort to get rid of the right wrong view, to achieve the right view. What he wants to get rid of? The smoking part, to achieve the non-smoking status. And he's mindful, get rid of the wrong view, achieve the right view. So these three things circle around. So we get the right view, right effort, right mindfulness. Each time it loops and circles around, cleaning up at that particular time. So these right views lead to the skill state of the mind. The wrong view leads to the unskilled state of the mind. So what we are developing is kusal, the right views, the right thoughts. So when all those skill states, eight skill states are maintained, that are in eightfold path, well, you can do wonders with that. So always we get views. More you know about Dhamma, more you read about Dhamma, then your views become purified. Because someone may be here telling you something wrong here and there. And then you hear the Buddha, you have faith about the Buddha, and Buddha said, no, this is not the case. This is the correct thing. Even this discourse we were just discussing. You know, the Diganaka went to the first one. Ah, Buddha is appreciating my view. Because that Buddha was saying that he is close to not being attached, sort of thing. And Buddha said, it is not quite there yet. And Buddha went to the correct one. So that's how it purifies. So if you have seen, if you hear, what happened to us was we had wrong views. Those wrong views were either imposed or upon us by my own doing or others doing. Buddha said in another discourse as well, this one. So either way, we got it corrupted. Once you got the wrong view, then you, it's guaranteed that you get the wrong thought. And it is guaranteeing to you that you get the wrong speech. You know, the wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong mindfulness, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness, and wrong concentration. So you live the delusion. It's guaranteed. Buddha said, from the right, wrong view, everything is happening. We have the right view, then the right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. It is guaranteed as well. So the view is the first.
Talking about right views and wrong views, actually, I was guilty as well in the past. When I used to think about the Divyalok and Apaya, so I thought as a human, I have heard that people saying that the divine realms and the Nirvana is all in this earth.
Mm-hmm.
So all I could see was what I could grasp from my eyes and my senses. So I thought this is the right thing. So people who are having a good life was almost the Divyalok life, and people who are suffering is the Apaya. But that's not what Buddha said.
Yeah.
Because we don't have the senses to see everything in the world.
No.
The basic example is, we all know that we have heaps of bacteria, millions of bacteria on ourselves, but we don't see them. But if you put a microscope, then we can see the truth.
Yeah.
The same way, if you take radio waves, microwaves, anything, we don't see them. But we know that it's there.
Yeah.
Because we don't see it, we don't think that it's there.
That's right. Yes. The wrong view. We are rising the wrong view. Yeah.
And again, I think in the lay life, people who doesn't know about Dhamma, they are the ones who define the hell is here and the divine world is here. Because that is because what they think is the divine world is the comforts.
Yes. Comfort,
yes.
And
yes.
If you have the comforts, you think that they are here behind the heaven.
Mm.
And so
they see the hell, you know, the beggars and sort of things.
Yes.
They see that this is the hell and
that
the people who are going in the Benz car and living in that
five-story
apartment. They are the in the hell. So,
but they themselves are in hell sometimes.
Yeah, they are.
Not only sometimes, I mean every
most of the time.
If you do understand Dhamma, so every action that you do, that you get a result. Mm-hmm. So when you think about that, there is more towards the hell than for the divine world.
Yeah, that's why it is very important to read the discourses. I mean, Buddha's time, you can say that this one discourse was good enough for two people, one to attain the stream of interest state, one to attain the arahantship. Nowadays, it is so corrupted. Our mind became so corrupted. And we call something about the science and, you know, that sort of thing, and then getting corrupted in that way as well.
Because, you know, that we think that we know everything.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, wrong
views. Wrong views, yeah. So many wrong views. And Buddha has passed away, so 2,500 years has been gone, and within that time, quite a lot of corruptions. And so we heard quite a lot of wrong dhamma, like that you what you're talking about. I have heard the same thing as well. So
yeah,
I
would, we thought it is that before you see the dhamma, so that's what we thought.
It's like you name and like most. Those who don't know about dhamma would definitely think like that. I mean, it's hell and heaven because you don't see them.
That's right, yeah.
And again, it is because of the wrong way, because we did not believe that there is a real hell or there is a real divine world.
Mm.
That's why we thought it is, that's what I thought it is this.
Mm. Mm.
And even though I didn't hold that idea that strong, but if I haven't heard this Dhamma, so that's how I die one day, you know, and that's what I take to the next life.
Mm. Yeah. So by reading Dhamma and hearing Dhamma, those views get purified. And when I was reading this Sutra Pitaka, discourses of the Buddha, I was thinking, what I have been hearing so far? This is utter wrong thing I have been hearing and giving my mind and thought to that those wrong things. And then I saw completely different world, different thing. That's why it is important. Otherwise, you don't have to struggle this much. But because of the lack of faith, our mind became corrupted. Very, very, very. It's becoming, you know, in the greedy parts nowadays, what young children and sort of thing. They see that the rich people, bankers and sort of thing, they see the TV, you know, advertising and showing these things. So they see that's the world. That's how I should behave. In the school, they've been taught as well, and you know, to do behave this way, do that way. So they think that's what I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And their mind becomes more and more corrupted, faster than ours. So that's why even the world is collapsing, you know, that this, you know, this crisis, financial crisis happened. And the bankers are still, you know, they are getting from the government, you know, millions and millions of dollars, which they still insist getting that. They can't think. So their ability to think is gone because of the greediness. And it is happening very rapidly. That's why people's lifespan is going down.
I think it's maybe it is the way that how this crowd of people and are born to this, I mean, in the future. So there is, then we will pass away and then somebody, and again every day somebody is born, isn't it? And then when it says that, I mean, the weapons, the number of weapons increases and with at the end of the, I mean, there will be one time that what you get is what you could see in the television or wherever these people created. That would be the one that's happening in the future, no? And then the way that whatever you have done in the past, in the previous birth, the karma will revert to that time to do more bad things. And so there is no escape from that.
Yes. So that's why it is very dangerous to be born as a human being again. You know, if you can escape while you can, to go to a divine world or something, wait there until the next Buddha comes in. Oh, keep on meditating in that world to, you know, get rid of this thing. And over here it is, you can say, it's so bad.
In the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, at the end, Buddha said that if one contemplates about four mindfulness like that, that person can become an arahant in 7 years, or if he would keep coming down
to 7 days.
Yeah, so is it like
yes, it can be done.
It can be done.
Mm-hmm. It can be done.
So do you have to have practice from the previous past?
Well, yeah. You Buddha said if you can do it even now, exactly as Buddha said, you can do it in 7 days. Right? Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But see, if you don't have the practice, you can't actually do it that way.
Seven days,
right? And if you have done to a certain extent, you can do it in a certain way. So it is that ability.
Mm-hmm. That is why I think the Buddha said that time frame, depending on your previous karma, that means experience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes within one sharman, one can attain. And so.
Yeah. You see that the good things you have done is coming and playing you that part as well, because let's say you want to do it, okay? Now, let's say I'm going to a forest or doing the meditation, but nobody giving you anything to eat. You can't then put effort and do it that one. So, if you have given before, food and things, other people will come and give you, or you when you go there, you get it. So therefore you can sustain. So those factors are there as well. So, the human factors, whatever thing that you have developed before. So, we got the karma, this body, the mind and all those things that we got from our former karma. Therefore we have to do a part to that, because that if we haven't done good things before, we are not going to get any. You can't sustain. If you can't sustain the body, you can't actually contemplate the rest. So all dependent, that's alien. Remember, we were discussing about that one. We are all dependent on that one. So that's why Buddha says that develop this skill stage, kusal. So that it always with you, skill states of the mind.
So if we hadn't done something good in the past, we wouldn't meet the Buddha's teaching at all.
Yeah, you won't get any chance, I suppose. You would have been in the hell. And then, you must have done something good to be born as a human being. That quite a lot good things to be become a human being is difficult. And to be born in the era where the Buddha even has been passed away 2500 years, and still Dhamma is there. And not only that, to go and listen to a Dhamma and meditate about this thing will all come with the previous practice.
And again, be born in an environment that you can
Do it, if you are born in Iraq or somewhere, where there's quite a lot of troubles, then you can't, you won't be able to hear. And there are discourses talking about that as well, that...
And again, you will, if you may meditate, but you may not be doing it in the right way.
That's right. Yeah, that is also there. You may be doing the meditation, you haven't got, you are not doing it rightly, because you are not getting good guidance to do it right. And even the guidance is given, one can't acquire that guidance and follow according to that one. So all comes with, it is same thing that when some students are studying the same class and teacher says this one, 2 + 3 = 5, whatever thing. One grasps that one very quickly, others don't. Why? Teacher said the same thing to all of them, isn't it? So it's the ability that one has developed before as well. But if you have the effort and then, the desire to do this one, and with the courage, one can go as much as you can go. Stop for today.